This podcast is brought to you by BetRivers. Download the BetRivers app from the App Store or Google Play Store. Must be 21. Available in Ohio only. Void where prohibited. Terms and conditions apply. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Sports gaming is provided in partnership with Dayton Real Estate Ventures, LLC, DBA, Hollywood Gaming at Dayton Raceway.
If you're a tennis fan, you'll love Betting Weekly Game Bet Match on the BetRivers Network. Whether you're a bettor or just love tennis, you'll enjoy the in-depth analysis each week of the tennis calendar. Subscribe to Game Bet Match today from your favorite podcast provider. It's the Mike Francesa Podcast on the BetRivers Network.
Hello again, everybody, and welcome to the Mike Francesa Podcast. And the Mike Francesa Podcast on the BetRivers Network is brought to you by Casamigos Tequila. Casamigos Tequila is brought to you by those who drink it. Very busy Thursday, as busy as they come. Knicks tonight, Yankees, Islanders, and of course, the highly anticipated NFL draft. Now, just let me set the day for you. We will have tonight two up-to-the-minute podcasts. When the Knick game's over, I will have an NBA podcast up on the Knicks as soon as the game's over. As soon as the Jets pick, I will review the first 10 picks, the Giant pick, the Jet pick. So you will have an NFL draft commentary on the podcast tonight and a separate Knick podcast tonight. So two new podcasts will be there for you this evening. They will be ready for your consumption this evening. So you have this one today, and then you have two this evening. So very, very busy time. Now, we've already gone through the draft. There's nothing really new. The only bit of information that I have that's relatively new is the very, very strong currents that we're getting that May will go third to the Patriots. So despite Williams is going one, if you've heard anything else, forget it. Despite Daniels trying to do anything he can to not be drafted by Washington, I still think they're going to draft him. Do I know they're going to draft him? I do not, nor does anybody else. I think they are going to draft him. That will leave May or a trade or Harrison for the Pats. I think the Pats, you're starting to hear much stronger currents that the Pats will go May. If that happens, I believe that Minnesota will try to get to four. Now, Arizona has a decision to make. Do they take Harrison, who is the best player in this draft, or do they trade the pick? That's what's going to happen with Arizona. Minnesota is trying very hard to get into the top of this draft, as everybody knows. Now, should they take Harrison, Minnesota will try to get to five to take the Michigan quarterback. There have been rumors about the Giants moving up and taking a quarterback. I still think the Giants are going to stay at six and take Neighbors. I think that's what's going to happen. I think Harrison will be off the board by five. He doesn't get past San Diego, he doesn't get past the Chargers. He might go before that. There are teams trying to trade into three or four for Harrison. Also, do not rule out that the Pats say, wait a second, are we going to take the third quarterback or the best player in the draft? Maybe they turn around and take Harrison. Harrison's off the board by five. If he goes past five, I'd be shocked. I don't think it happens. I think Harbaugh will take him if he's available. I think the Cardinals could take him, and I think he could go even to somebody in the three. I don't think the Pats will. I think they'll either take a quarterback or trade the pick, but I don't know that because Harrison is an extremely valuable commodity. So we'll see. I think he will go very early. And like I said, I think the first five picks will be the four quarterbacks and Harrison. And then the Giants take Neighbors. Tennessee takes all. What does Atlanta do? Do they take Adunze because he's there? Or do they take a defensive, the first defensive player in the draft, the edge rusher. We'll wait and see on that. Then the Bears, then the Jets, and the Jets will be faced with offensive line and Bowers. Offensive tackle or Bowers. That's what the Jets have to decide. I would prefer to tackle. I think they're going to take the tight end. If Ault's there and they don't take him, they made a huge mistake. I don't think Ault will be there, though. I think he'll be off the board. Now, game three this evening with the Knicks. Okay? It has been a very interesting first two games of the series. Before it started, I told you I thought it would be a seven-game series. I still believe it will be, unless Embiid can't play. Now, I know Robinson is a game-time decision tonight. I haven't heard anything new about Embiid. Embiid did not look good at the end of game two. He stayed in the game. He made some plays offensively. He didn't make any plays on the backboard. He didn't make any plays defensively. He couldn't even get up and down the floor. He's had an extra day of rest. Are we going to get the same Embiid? Are we going to get a little better Embiid? Are we going to get it worse Embiid? I don't know. But Embiid's health is a major factor. If Embiid's hurt, the series is over. If Embiid continues on his plight like he is every day now, dragging his leg around the court and scoring 30 points, I think the series will go seven. Now, the Knicks have to realize they are going to run into a very intense Philly team tonight, because you know that the coaching staff has pounded on them. You have got to match the Knicks' effort. They can't get every loose ball. They can't rip rebounds out of our hands. They can't want it more than we do, and they do. The Knicks play harder than just about anybody, and they've played harder than the Sixers. The Sixers have had the two best players on the floor, but they have not played as hard up and down the lineup. Now, you look at a couple of things here. I look at it like this. First two games, all hot, big hot. Big hot is Hartenstein. Hartenstein's game two was tremendous. 30 minutes, 14 points, 7 of 8 from the floor, big baskets, 8 rebounds, including the offensive rebound that turned, you know, was the game winner. 4 assists, 3 blocks, played brilliantly. Really was sensational. And all hot. If I have to tell you who he is, I don't know what you're watching. He has been unbelievable. Hart played 48 minutes in game two. Played 41 minutes in game one. He played 48 minutes in game two. He was 22-13 in game one. He was 21-15 in game two. Most of it in the first half, yes. But, I mean, 21.5 points and 14 rebounds a game in this series, that's a lot for Hart to do every game. He is incredibly important in this series, and the Knicks need him to put forth that kind of effort every night. Brunson is 16-55 in the two games. That's 29% on massive volume. 26 shots game one, 29 shots game two. He has not looked comfortable. He has not gotten easy shots. They have driven him crazy in the first two games, and I don't see why it would change. They have the right personnel, from Oubre to Batum to Harris to Maxey. They have a bunch of guys who can harass him. They can play bigger than him. They can double team him. And if they continue to drive him crazy, it's going to be a big factor. It already has been a big factor. Knicks shot 45% in game one from three. They shot 33% from three in game two. That will not cut it. Because what's going to change here is this, and it's something you've heard me preach often. The guys in the line of 3-7, 3-8 play much better at home than they do on the road in the playoffs. They've gotten nothing out of Hield in this first two games. He's had no points in the first game, 2 points in the second game. That guy's capable of going out and hitting six threes. Do not be surprised if you see him hit his first tonight and then all of a sudden go off. Batum had a 3-point game and a 6-point game. In the play-in game against Miami, he had a 20-point game. Again, could go off. And then Harris. We know Harris is the whipping boy. We know he's been a huge disappointment, but he is capable of going out and having a 20-point night. So, Hield, Batum, Harris, you got to watch those guys tonight because they'll score. And the one of them that rings the bell early with a three and then hits the second three, good night, he's off to the races. And that's going to happen in their building. They're not going to need as many points from Maxey and Embiid as they've needed on the road. Because on the road, your one and two have to show up. And that's what the Knicks have to worry about now is, can they count on their one to come up with a big night? If he doesn't, they got to get it from a lot of different places. You're telling me that McBride's going to keep doing what he's done? Is Bogdanovich going to make the three? Hart? Dante? Dante was 4-for-8 from three, including the game winner in the last one. Hart's knocked down some threes in game one. McBride has given them big minutes. But when you're on the road, it's a little different. And it will be very interesting. I expect, and I'm sure the Knicks expect, Philly to come out wild tonight. The crowd will be wild. They'll be wild. If the Knicks can stave that off or get off to a good start and put Philly on, it's really put them on the run here and get a lead, or just withstand that initial surge, they could be all right. But they are going to need Brunson scoring. He has got to get more consistently into the flow of this game. And they cannot have him shooting 29% the whole series. It's going to be a very tough series to win if he's going to shoot 29%. Even though they've gotten colossal play from Hart and really good play from Robinson in game one, really good play from Hartenstein in game two. Yes, they have role players. Yes, they have players who are hungry. Yes, you know, they've gotten it from all their guys, Bogdanovich, McBride, you name it. Their bench has done a great job. Now you'll see the Philly bench respond in this game. And their role players respond because that's what happens in the playoffs in your building. Your players get braver. They get more comfortable. If I'm the Knicks, I want to run for two reasons. One, I need those easy baskets. Hart with an energy basket. The drive, the length of the floor. You know, Hart taking the rebound down and going the length of the floor and trying to lay it in is one of the most successful players in the league doing that. There's only a couple of guys in the league who take it off one. You know, LeBron does that all the time, but Hart does it a lot. Those I call energy baskets. Philly did a much better job of balancing the floor in game two than they did in game one when they got hurt with the fast break. They didn't get hurt. Philly didn't get hurt until late on the offensive glass in game two, but it was an offensive rebound off the missed three, which wound up Hartenstein gets the rebound. Great rebound. Hits OG. OG hits Dante. Dante makes the three. Their offensive rebounding is something Philly has got to combat, especially in big moments of the game. Now, the problem is they're playing Embiid, and Embiid gave them no rebounds in the second half. He didn't try to jump. He couldn't jump. So his leg is a big factor. Listen, when you're down 2-0 in the series, you haven't played a home game yet. The old adage, you're not out of a series or in trouble in a series until you lose a home game. The Knicks held serve. Now Philly tries to hold serve. But Philly has to win tonight. There's no ifs, ands, or buts. They have to win this game. So it's a must win. Matter of fact, in my mind, the next two are must wins for Philly. Have to have both of them. They don't, the series probably closes in five. So they have to have both. Knicks right now playing with house money. They don't have to get a game in Philly. They'd love to get a game in Philly. They don't have to. But if they go back to New York, where Philly was in both games, start to finish, if they go back to New York and Brunson still hasn't figured this out and it's still bad for him and you're wondering about the second scorer and you're still now wondering about the lead scorer and it's 2-2 this series, you're going to be very, very concerned. So if there's one thing the Knicks could take out of this game, even if they lose it tonight, is establishing that Brunson can get comfortable scoring moments in this game where he is in the flow and he is causing a lot of trouble for the defense. So far, he's done none of that in the first two games. And it is very hard to win a seven-game series when your number one player is not playing well. That is very, very hard to do because you go into the playoffs thinking, my one and two have got to establish who they are. Otherwise, I can't win. And the Knicks have gotten so much effort from so many other guys, from their bench, from Hart. I mean, Hart's given them 22 points, 21.5 a game. You're talking about going a mile over his scoring average. A mile over his scoring average. 21.5 and 14 boards per game. It's going to be hard for him to keep up those numbers. And you look, and they needed every bit. They needed everything to break right. And Philly to mess up three or four times for them to win game two. And that was with some moments, okay? That was with some guys doing some good things in that game. That was with guys coming through and doing some good things. It wasn't like they, you know, weren't getting performances. They still, though, have to compensate for their star going 8-for-29. Hart gives them those big, he gives them 21 and 15. They get 19 out of Dante on just 10 shots. He goes 4-for-8 from three. He goes 5-for-5 from the foul line. See, that's one thing Brunson did in game two. He got to the foul line 9 times, made 7. You know, they get 14 from Hartenstein. They get double digits from OG. They get McBride wasn't as good in this game. He didn't hit from three. He was 4-for-11, 0-for-3 from three, but he still gave them some big points, including that huge rebound where he tore the ball away from Maxey in what was just a show of strength. And the two threes Bogdanovich hit early in that fourth quarter were big trays. So they've gotten moments from a lot of different people. That's why they're 2-0. Both games were a struggle. The second game, obviously a miracle for them to come back and win it. We should be sitting here right now and talking about 1-1 and what are the Knicks going to do? Instead, it's 2-0, and that takes a lot of the pressure off. That's one thing the Knicks didn't pack for Philly this time. Pressure. If they were 1-1, the pressure would have been carried down in a huge crate. There's none of that because they're 2-0. The worst they're coming home is 2-2. Sure, they want to get one and try and end it in five. Absolutely, that's the idea. But they're not facing what they would have faced if they hadn't gotten a miracle. And let's be honest, we know that the NBA talked about the two fouls that were committed against Maxey and the fact that they should have called a, should have recognized a timeout. But here's the deal. That timeout has to be rote. when they hit the three, it's automatic. If you have a timeout, it's timeout. Move the ball up the court. Why are you inbounding it underneath your basket if you don't have to? That was such a blatant mistake. Forget what happened on the inbounds. They were quick, trying to make a quick move with the inbounds. All right. Yes, Brunson grabbed him by the jersey. Yes, he got knocked down. But they shouldn't even have been inbounding the ball there. It made no sense. This is a championship coach and a veteran team. What are they doing? Automatic. How many times have you seen in the NBA? Ball goes through the basket. Timeout. Inbound a ball in the front court. You don't ever want to inbound a ball in the last seconds underneath your basket if you don't have to. Because of what can happen right there, as you just saw. You don't get a call. You don't get recognized for the timeout. And they mess up the play. They're too quick. Maxey moves before he thinks. We know how good he's been in these two games. He's been unstoppable in these two games from an offensive standpoint. But he's also made some really rambunctious and really plays that were just out of control. He came up court with the ball and the lead, and he couldn't wait to go to the basket, dribble the ball off his foot out of bounds. When they came up court, when they inbounded and went for the play, when they came up the court with Maxey, down one, they rushed that play. There was no reason for them to go at that breakneck speed. And then the last play of the game, Knicks choose not to foul, and it was just a disjointed play. So, yes, the Knicks got a break there from the foul situation. They did. But the Knicks took advantage of that break, and Philly had plenty of opportunities to be smart there. Smart with the basketball, get the timeout. Smart and patient and just doing it the right way. Instead, they were like it was their hair was on fire. And that's how it came off. I mean, Maxey is out of control while being a lethal force offensively. I mean, he goes to the basket and scores at will. They can't stop him. I mean, he's electrifying going to the basket. And he's got range on his jump shot. But their lack of poise and lack of smarts at the end of that game cost them as much as the bad call, if not more. And the Knicks did what you're supposed to do. Take advantage of an opportunity that goes your way and make it stick. They miss the shot. They get the offensive rebound. They make the extra pass. They hit the open man. He knocks down a tray, and away we go. The thing you've seen from the Knicks in these first two games is, number one, all hands on deck. The guys playing have all contributed. Number two, they get every 50-50 ball. They get every loose ball. They want it more. They're more physical. They're more aggressive. They're more intense. And Philly needs to match that this evening, and I'm sure that has been drummed into their heads the last 2 days, is that, hey, we have to match their aggression. They can't want it more than us. And in the first two games, despite Philly doing some really good things and getting a lot of points out of their 1-2 guys, the Knicks look like they are more intense, more driven, and want it more. Watch early tonight. First loose ball, watch that there'll be 3 sixes on the ground. That's my prediction. They will be very hungry off the bat tonight. But that's the Knicks' temperament. It's not the Sixers' temperament. So it's going to be short-lived, that part of it. What's got to happen for them is, do their role players come to the dance after two vacant games? Do they come to the dance tonight? I think a bunch of them will. I think a bunch of them really will. Now, let me get to a couple other things. First, let me remind you that NBA playoffs parlay insurance. Now, Bet Rivers offers oh-so-close parlay insurance during the NBA playoffs. So, place a parlay of four or more legs on an NBA playoff game each day. You get part of your stake back in bonus bets if you're exactly one leg short of hitting your parlay. So let's say you come close and each of that. You know, the one guy you had scoring over 17.5 didn't get there. He scored 15. The insurance will take care of that. The insurance is valid on your first NBA parlay of the day. See the Bet Rivers app for more details and see how much stake back you're eligible for. Hey. You like getting stuff back. You like getting the things covered. So check it out. Go to the Bet Rivers app and get all the details and get some parlay insurance on those same game parlays that everybody loves so much. Those have become all the rage, those same game parlays. Now, Mets came back, lost the last game in L.A. badly, lost the first two in San Francisco. Didn't want to finish the trip up with four straight losses. Giants had to scratch their former star player, star pitcher who has been terrible so far this year since he signed late, and he is now on the injured list. The thing you're taking from the game is another good pitching performance. But the biggest thing you take it from the game is everybody was getting to the point of craziness with Lindor. Right? Oh, can't bat him third against righties, you know, drop him in the lineup, bench him against righties, blah, 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 blah. It just shows you what one day can do. But it really wasn't one day, but in essence, what one day can do. So he goes there yesterday. He goes 4 for 5. He scores 2 runs. He hits 2 homers. He knocks in 4 runs. So he hits 2 home runs, and he has 4 RBIs, which is basically half his production for the whole season so far. So he's almost hit 100 at-bats. He's at 97 at-bats. But now he's gotten over 200 in batting average. Now he's come out of it where in his last, forget yesterday where he had 2 homers and 4 RBIs, which was in essence half his production for the month. But in his last 38 at-bats, he's hit .357 with 3 homers and 8 RBIs. So that's the last 28 at-bats, 10 for 28, 3 homers, 8 RBIs. Yesterday's big day, 2 homers, 4 hits, 4 runs batted in. And now you leave him alone. Because before you know it, he's played, it's June 1st, and he's got 10 homers in his first 200 at-bats. And you know what? He's a third of the way to 30 home run season. So RBIs are a little light right now, but that can change in a hurry. Couple more games like yesterday with 4 RBIs can change that in a hurry. So all the worry can now go by the boards because he yesterday decided, you know what, I'll just double my production for the month right here. And that's what he's capable of. He's capable to go 4 for 5 with 2 homers and 4 RBIs, which, you know, not too many guys can have that game. He did. Now things have quieted down, you leave him alone. and let him go about his business. Is he going to swing better from the right side? Yes, he did all last year. Is he going to get his numbers up where, yeah, he's going to hit 275 or 80. He's going to hit 30 home runs. He's knocking 95 runs and score 100 runs. That's who he is. And that's what he'll wind up doing. So you leave him alone. He plays every day. You leave him alone. He'll get hot. He's already started to get warmed up. So I would not worry about him. And that should pretty much cease all the talk for a while. He needed that one day to go out there and kind of shake things up and wake up. Now he can come home, get on the homestand, you know, get some hits, hit some doubles, knock in some runs, and away we go. Was it ugly for a while? Yes, it was really ugly for a while. Was the weather bad? Yes. Was that probably a factor? Yeah, and he's a slow starter. I mean, so it happens. Again, that day yesterday shuts up the whole thing. Last night, the first game where Judge and Soto hit homers, I believe, in the same game. Judge homers, Rizzo homers, Soto homers. I'm sure it's going to happen plenty of times this year. They haven't gone back-to-back yet. I'm sure that's coming, you know, pretty soon. Again, Soto's gotten off to the fast start. Judge had gotten off to a slow start. Now he's starting to crank it up a little bit. Again, you're not worried about him. Why would you? Why would you? I mean, come on. So, again, they have some issues with depth and with some of the guys like LeMahieu being re-injured right now. You worry about him. You worry about Rizzo. You worry about where they're going to replace these guys with if they need to replace them for a while. Cabrera's gotten off to a nice start, which allows him to stay in the lineup. And you're not worried about it that much because he's been productive. He was awful last year. He's been good so far this year. That's a distinct positive, so you go forward. And listen, they're in a good place right now. Now, listen, if you're home and you're playing the A's a four-game series, you should be fine. The A's are improved, and boy, do they have a couple of arms that you just like to steal. You know, they have a couple of arms that you would just love to be able to go pirate off that team because, man, they got, including that reliever, Mason Miller. Wow, can he throw? But the Yankees are 17-8. But if you turn around, Baltimore's right there. Everybody in the division is at least 500. It's a good division. Boston's playing better than you think. You know, they have a habit of doing that. They sneak up on people. Tampa's 500. They're at the bottom. But everybody's got a winning record. It's not a soft division. We know that. And Baltimore's good. They're 16-8. Cleveland's off to an amazing start at 17-7. I mean, that is, you know, Kansas City also at 15-10. But Cleveland, I did not see Cleveland at 17-7. Did not. Detroit's 14-11. They got off to a fast start. I'm not thinking a whole lot about them. In the National League, there's Atlanta, as you would expect. Philly's off solid. The Mets are just fine. Washington's better than you would have thought at 10-13. I thought they'd lose 100 games. Still do, but 10-13 is not bad. Miami's a disaster. They will not come out of this. They had a good year last year. They got off to the bad start here at 0-9. Now they're 6-20. They're buried, and they will not get out. I liked Milwaukee a lot this year as an over even, and they're off to a fast start of 15-8. I like them. Dodgers are just fine. And, you know, am I surprised by a whole lot? Yeah, I mean, Miami's in worse shape than you would have expected. Obviously, the team that has you the most puzzled right now is Houston. And the question is, Houston has won 90 or more games, a lot of years, 100 games, since 2016. The only year they didn't was the COVID year. They got off with the four-game losing streak against the Yankees, the four-game sweep. They are 7-18. At what point are you really concerned? Now, I'm sure they're concerned now because they're playing, 28% baseball. But when do you look at it and say, hey, they're not going to playoffs this year? You ready to say it now? No. I'm going to give them another month. See, 7-18, it's going to take you now to the All-Star break to have a decent record. You chip away, you play a couple games over 500 in the next month to kind of get right the ship. They're not going to turn around and go, 22-10 over a 32-game stretch. I mean, that's too much to ask, but do they chip away? They have not started back from this yet. They have kept reeling. The Yankees punished them in games that could have gone either way. Come from behind wins, wild ninth innings, Soto throwing a guy out the plate. The Sunday where they hit balls that just were an inch foul or just didn't get out of the park or, great plays were made on them. And now they find themselves, but here's the thing, they're minus 34 runs. Minus 34 runs. That's playing like a bad team. That's playing like a really bad team. Now, what's a disaster runs? Well, look at the White Sox. They're 3-21. You knew they were going to have a bad year. They're going to have a crazy bad year. They're minus 82 runs so far. So they aren't just losing. They're getting the heck beat out of them. But so are the Astros on too many nights. Not only losing close games, they're losing big. They're not scoring minus 34. That's a lot. That is a lot. It really is. You expect it to be under 500, minus 20 or so, but 34 for a team like them is a lot. But it shows you in the win-loss. Yes, they lost close games to the Yankees and stuff, but 7-18, that is a really, really tough start. And it's going to take them a while now to get out of this. The question is, what is their mentality in this whole thing? Do they think that they've reached the end of the line with the cycle? They've been on top for so long. They have been an incredibly consistent juggernaut for years. Is that run over? That's the question they have to ask themselves right now. Emails when we come back.
You're listening to the Mike Francesa podcast on the Bet Rivers Network.
I'm smiling because my horse partner, Leon Slater, is showing me pictures of him out in Reynolds Channel, catching striped bass right now. And it's a cold day today. It's cold. It was like 39 this morning. It's chilly all day today. And how cold it is on the water. He loves the fish and he's out there and he's holding up, sends me a picture of this big striped bass he caught in Reynolds Channel. And it's funny. Reynolds Channel, we named the horse Reynolds Channel. And that's where he is fishing right now. And we have, he fished it his whole life. I grew up because Reynolds Channel is the body of water that makes the Long Beach area a barrier island. Long Beach, as you probably know, is surrounded by water. There's a barrier island down there. And at one end is Point Lookout. Then you have Lido. Then you have Long Beach City proper. Then you have East Atlantic Beach, Atlantic Beach, and Silver Point. It's about 6 and change long from one end to the other, from one inlet, the Rockaway Inlet, to the Jones Beach Inlet. And on one side is the Atlantic Ocean, and it's about 1,000 feet wide. And then on the other side is Reynolds Channel. And I obviously grew up in Reynolds Channel. I mean, Reynolds Channel was right. My house was between Reynolds Channel and the ocean. And, you know, we spent a lot of time as kids, not only fishing in Reynolds Channel, swimming in Reynolds Channel. We took our surfboards across and used to go clamming across into that swampland there and bring the clams back and sell them. So Reynolds Channel is kind of an interesting part of my youth. And he picked the name of the horse because he likes to fish and he goes into that area and fishes. And that's where he is today. So he just sent me a picture. I was going to go with him and I said, too cold, I'll go next time. Because I didn't want to sit in the boat for 6 hours in this freezing weather. So he's out there, and I see he's already got a fish. So good for him. Let me get to the emails. If you want to send an email, we haven't done one in a while. MikeFrancesaPodcast@gmail.com. Okay? MikeFrancesaPodcast@gmail.com. All right, John starts us off. If Jokic gets a ring this year, do you think he will be on pace to be a top 10 player of all time? I got to think about who he's going to bump, John. But Jokic is a great, he's an artist. He is a great basketball player. A unique player. He reminds me of a little bit of Bill Walton. Now, he doesn't have Bill Walton's defensive capabilities. They both were brilliant passers. Jokic is a little better offensively. But his ability and what he can do on the basketball floor to get his shot, to score with consistency, to make the passes that he makes. When you talk about top 10 players, think about what you're talking about. At the top of that list, you have, in no particular order, you have Jordan and you have LeBron. You have Russell and Wilt and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. And you already have five spots gone. Then you think about the likes of Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, Hakeem Olajuwon, Tim Duncan. Go down the list. I mean, you get to 10 really fast. Jerry West, Oscar Robertson. I mean, you go. It's hard to squeeze 10. It's very hard. Kobe Bryant, etc. So getting into that top 10 is such rarefied air historically, but is he good enough to be considered in that area? Yes, he is. Dave, after what happened a few days ago, do you think umpires have it out for Boone? No, I thought that was a weird situation. Listen, the umpire, he screwed up. I mean, he's got a rep as a solid umpire. He's from an umpiring family. I saw the replay of it. I didn't see it live. All right. Did he have a little rabbit ears there? Yes. Do you know the expression rabbit ears is an expression players use either for a player or an umpire who hears the bench jockeying? All right. You say he has rabbit ears, rabbit, like a rabbit, big ears, you know, and he has everything. So in the old days, there was a lot of bench jockeying went on. Not so much, I don't think, anymore. Players are different now. Players association's different, the whole thing. It used to be big. You had guys who were great, let alone guys who were great bench jockeys in the old days. And he, clearly the guy behind the bench, I mean, the guy sitting in the first couple of seats there, he screamed at the umpire. He thought it was Boone. He threw him out. When Boone went up and said, I didn't say anything, he said, I don't care who said it, you're out anyway. That was nonsense, okay? He should be reprimanded. I actually think he should be sat down for a couple of days because it was outrageous what he did. You can't be that wrong, okay? Boone didn't do anything. How can you throw him out of the game and didn't say anything? He should have at least, you know, we can check everything on videotape. Why can't you check that on videotape? So use your common sense. Now, he didn't. He should be reprimanded for that, no question. But I think too much has been made of it. It's, you know, it's kind of funny, but if it happened in a really big spot in a playoff game or something like that, there'd be serious repercussions. But Boone has a, you know, he gets hot. He gets hot. You know, some guys get thrown out. Some guys don't get thrown out. Some guys have reputations for getting on umpires. Some guys don't. Boone's, he's on the more aggressive side of the 50 percentile. He's not crazy, okay? He's not Earl Weaver. He's not, you know, out of control as a manager. He's not nuts with umpires. So, but he does have a temper. So, hey, he gets thrown out more than some guys do. But I don't think they have it in for him. And I just think he heard something and he thought it was Boone and he threw him. But he shouldn't have. And he should be reprimanded for it. But I think it's gotten way, it's just a peculiar play, but it's he should be reprimanded for it because it was that outrageous. Kelly, why wouldn't the Giants take Ault at 6 given all the offensive line questions they have had through the years? Well, they already have what they think is a premier player at that position. So they aren't going to use that pick on a tackle, and they've already done that. Okay? I agree that they could still help their offensive line, and they did in free agency. They need a wide receiver. Now, you could say they need a quarterback. That's fine. They're not going to find him at 6. They need a wide receiver, and they think they can get a game breaker at 6. That's why you take him. They aren't as needy on the offensive line as the Jets are. Plus, they are not in the unique situation like the Jets are, dealing with an aging legend who needs to be protected at all costs. Kevin, OG is a great defender, but he's not quick enough to guard Maxey. Shouldn't somebody else guard him? I think we will see some adjustments there on Maxey. OG can pretty much guard anybody. Maxey is a very tough cover. Very tough. And if he's going to be given a green light where he can take as many shots as he wants, which is pretty much what's gone on here, he's going to score his points. You want to make him turn the ball over, you want to make him miss shots. You know he's going to score points. In this series, I think OG is going to spend minutes on Maxey. He has to. Because you're not going to use him. To just use him as a double teamer and just exclusively wouldn't make sense on Embiid, and there's nobody else that he needs to shut down on a regular basis. So I understand Maxey has scored points on him, but he's going to see minutes on Maxey. I don't think there's any way around that in this game, the way it's configured. Do you think Tom Brady will be a good color commentator? No, I don't. I don't think his heart's in it. I don't think his personality is such. I don't think he's going to be great at it. I really don't. I think there's a unique quality that you have to bring that allows you to, as an analyst, see the game quickly. Plus, bring personality into it. It's a tricky job for the analyst in football because you're going to spend a lot of time over replay. You're going to spend a lot of time breaking down what happens on replay. And you also have to be very personable and glib in how you do it. I don't see him there. Plus, now that he's already an owner, I think he comes at it from a different... See, that's why some of his comments are weird. He just got ownership. He is the third player in the history of the NFL. Third guy who was a player who had ownership. The first one is George Halas, which was a player owner back in the 20s. So that doesn't count. The second guy really doesn't count either because it's Jerry Richardson, who played for the Colts, retired, and then made a fortune with Hardee's and then bought the Carolina Panthers. So that's a different way of going in it as a player. He's a player who went in and took a stake of a team. He now has been approved, and you have to be approved to have points with the Raiders. He has made comments about playing again. He has to give that up. That's why he's never playing again. He has to give up ownership if he plays again. He can't even play for the Raiders. He can't play for anybody. An owner can't play. He can't wear a uniform. Because if you allowed an owner to be part of the game, then Jerry Jones would have been coaching and Ted Turner would have been a manager many, many years ago. They don't allow that for that reason, because you're going to get guys like those guys or, you know, Bob Irsay coaching the team. So they make that impossible for ownership to do that. And he now is an owner, a recognized owner, part owner, small part, but he has points in the Raiders. He is the first NFL player in modern times, and really, if you look at it in conventional terms, he's the first player to be able to do this. So I think that will impact him as a broadcaster. I think that will impact him in any thoughts of playing again, which I think are ridiculous. But I don't, to answer the question, I don't think he's going to be great at it. I really don't. I don't think he has that personality. I just don't see it happening. You know, there's certain guys who are good. Now, Manning, Peyton would have been really good as an analyst, but he's better just being Peyton because he is, in his own right, a TV personality. He's great on TV. He's great in commercials. He's good in whatever he does. He'd be fine as an analyst, but I think he's better just being himself and knowing when he's there, it's about him. It's not about the game. With the analyst, it's got to still be about the game. It's funny. Romo changed things, and he was the first one in a long time to change things, but it seems like his style of doing it has become less and less popular the last couple of years, where people have started to now really go after him. And maybe his work ethic and preparation needs to be a little better than it is. You can't just wing this. It's not built for you just to wing it, because there's too many things to follow in this league if you're going to do this job right. See, I didn't think early on Aikman had the personality to be a terrific analyst, but he's come at it almost in a different way, but it's worked really well. He's really good at it, and he's got his own, it's almost like he brings kind of a cowboy way of doing things to it, but it works. You know, Aikman doesn't, he's got a sense of humor, but he doesn't go crazy thinking he's a comedian. And he takes it seriously. And you can sense that. And the fact that he had so much success as a player makes him look at things and say, oh, you know, you got to be better at this. You have to do this better. You have to do that better. Because he knows. He knows what it takes. And he was part of something special. And he was that kind of perfectionist as a player. I think he's become very good without having that incredible personality. He's still become very good at it. We'll see you later.
Thanks for listening to the Mike Francesa podcast on the BetRivers Network.